You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. He's one of the world's biggest fans of Marcus Tullius Cicero. Bob Hoy.
Right. That's a very generous opening, Jim, and good to be with you and good to be with our listeners out there, wherever they are.
And Bob, we know that the U.S. President Donald Trump is trying to force the U.S. Federal Reserve into lowering interest rates. Should he be this aggressive in doing that?
No, he shouldn't bother. But actually, I'm writing a standalone article on central banking. Mm-hmm. You know, the Fed back 100 or so years, and then prior to the Fed, of course, London was the financial center, and the Bank of England was the central bank. And the record is that short-dated interest rates, such as T-bills, go up in the boom, and they come down in the bust. So interest short rates, such as T-bills, rising is positive. Now, yes, the president is calling for, hinting about lower rates would be good, but I can show you all the way back that in every bust, T-bill rates go down. Now, 1932, at the worst of that bust, they got down to 0.08%, effectively zero, and the Fed funds rate was low. And it's a function of the way interest rates work. So the very good things happen when rates are rising. And then there's a dangerous naivety out there where so many believe that by lowering rates you can make things better. And Ross just did a chart on this, the S&P against T-bill rates, and it's fun to look at the chart. So, anybody interested in our listeners out there could request it. But so anyways, here we are. And typically, the short rates can decline for, the major depressions in the past have lasted for about 20 years. And sure, the 3 to 4 year business cycle continues, but each of the recessions are pretty heavy duty stuff, and each of the recoveries are kind of mild. And if you go back to the Bank of England in the 1880s, when that was the senior central bank, the big bubble then was 1873. And you had falling interest rates and a weak economy. So the economists couldn't understand it, why this prolonged weakness. And by 1880, they started calling it the Great Depression. So that was the first in the literature that I was able to stumble on where the Great Depression was used. And, of course, it ended naturally all on its own in 1895. And then you had prices and things and going heading up to the huge bubble of 1929. And you know what happened after that. So we are in a fabulous bubble, a really great bubble. And on our books early in the year, we were looking for strength out to around mid-year, and then we got, that was just 1st of July, you know, and then we said it could be firm into August, churning around perhaps, but ideally, or something like that, if you had a nice high in September, it would be set up for a classic disaster. Now, here's where we go back to the history books again. Most of the great disasters in the financial markets have occurred in the fall. And then historically, this Italian scholar Cipolla, he wrote a book on financial markets in Florence in the 1380s. And I went through that, and yes, they were sort of trading something like a mortgage then. And then there was a great collapse, and I was able to determine that the worst part of the disaster, guess what, happened in the fall. And that was the earliest I could go back on it. So the up now with strength is in line, and it's also setting up for at least an intermediate correction. But then when I look at things that bad things that can happen in the fall, could be some financial crisis coming. You know, we don't know yet, but it seems to be getting in line. So people will not want to be heavily invested in equities. And you might just want to have no leverage. You don't want to be leveraged up. It's a disaster. And build as much liquidity as you can.
Now, who sets mortgage rates? Is it the daily overnight rate, which the U.S. Fed and other central banks do? Or is there some other way that mortgage rates are set?
It's market forces set mortgage rates. And it's market forces that set the T-bill rate. And it's market forces that forces the Fed to act. So in the early 1900s, the movers and shakers, financial experts and bankers, knew that a financial crisis was always followed by a recession. So then they, in their genius, came up with the idea that a lender of last resort, i.e. the Fed, would come in and provide the liquidity at just the right thing. There would be no more credit crisis, and there would be no more recessions. Now, let's pinpoint that to, say, 1905. And here we are, out to 2025, and there have been 18 cyclical recessions. Now, in most disciplines, one failure on a hypothesis is enough to condemn it. But now you got 18 failures against the Fed, and the hypothesis of central banking is an utter failure. And yet the establishment won't recognize it, but I think it'll get another instruction by year end. So it'll be fascinating to watch.
The U.S. Federal Reserve established, I think, in 1913, after a meeting of J.P. Morgan and all the other big bankers on Jekyll Island.
Yeah, there's a book written about that.
Yeah, Creature from Jekyll Island.
Yeah. Well, all I know is it was locked in December 1913. Mm. And then opened its doors for business, or shall we say mischief, in the January 1914. And it has been, in anybody's books, an absolute failure.
What would work better, Bob?
Nothing. The best thing throughout history is to have a sound currency, as the senior currency has to be sound, and the only way you achieve that is by convertibility into gold. So that you can go to a bank and you can get $100 worth of banknotes, or you can get $100 worth of gold coins. That is the way the old gold standard worked.
Now, India and China and Russia have been piling up as much gold as they can for over 12 years. Canada and Britain got rid of all their gold reserves. Which countries are going to do best?
Well, the ones with the best reserve will be the best. And now also, I remember at the time when Canada was selling the last of its gold reserves, and there was, maybe that was 87 or 88, and there was some kind of a crisis, and I think there were important banks in Europe that were short of gold against its strength. So in order to join the big boys club, Canada sold all its gold. The establishment of interventionist economists thought this was great, but actually it was just helping an important entity who was short of gold in a strong market. So Canada sold its gold to get into a certain club of countries. It's ridiculous.
Do you think that the U.S. really has a major gold reserve in Fort Knox, or have they sold off all their gold? There hasn't been an audit of Fort Knox since the 60s.
Trump talks about it, but listen, I have some insider information on this, Jim.
Okay, Bob, we'll whisper it.
Keep it between you and I.
Okay.
Okay. Now, you remember the problem, the worry that went around a while ago about radon gas in basements? Well, the radon gas in the basement at Fort Knox has turned all of the gold to lead. And there you are. They've got huge deposit of lead in the basement of Fort Knox, thanks to the old standards of chemistry.
The alchemists will be really upset, Bob, with gold being turned to lead. Yeah. They were trying to turn lead into gold.
Mm-hmm. Because it seemed like a good idea. But the interesting thing, and I've read about these guys, they always needed some real money from a financier to conduct their experiments in alchemy, which was supposed to turn lead into gold and we'd all be filthy rich. So, yeah, there's a whole lot of fakery out there in history.
Should private citizens be trying to acquire as much gold as they can? And is there a difference between having a gold certificate or actually having gold in your vault or hidden under a floorboard?
Well, yeah. That purist, there'd be some distinction, but I would definitely have some appropriate gold coins in a safety deposit box. Yeah. And then don't lose the key.
Or a friend of mine bought some Bitcoin and then he lost the thumb drive that had all the code numbers for
it.
$13,000 worth of Bitcoin at the time, which probably would be worth hundreds of thousands now.
Yeah.
So don't lose that thumb drive.
No.
We'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught Bob's eye this week right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Some of the headlines that came to us from Property and Casualty News. Oh, I don't like casualty news. A headline, electric vehicles, the rising risk for insurers. What's the background to that, Bob?
Well, there you are. This property and casualty, that means property insurance and casualty insurance. So it's getting through to these important entities that electric cars are highly dangerous. They spontaneously blow up because of those lithium batteries, absolute disasters. They do blow up all on their own. And it takes huge amounts of water to extinguish them. Maybe it takes, and then, you know, you put it in a wrecker's lot, and then 3 days later, it takes off on fire again. And they're absolutely ridiculous, because you have to take a whole lot of rare earth elements and mine those, and that's a messy business, and then put them together for batteries. So the purists are buying electric cars because nothing bad comes out of a tailpipe. They don't have a tailpipe, but they are an insult to the environment to build, and then when they blow up, it's another insult to the environment.
In Toronto, we had four people die in a Tesla fire because nobody could get the doors open. They have to be opened by the driver or the computer. But if it's on fire, you can't get them out.
Yeah, everything's shorted out. Yeah, absolutely horror show.
So the procedure now, I'm told, for an electric vehicle fire is somehow pick up the burning vehicle and put it in a dumpster and then just keep pouring water on it for the next 3 days.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, also, what about property owners that have vehicles recharging? For myself, I'm worried about electric vehicles in an underground parkade. There are sprinklers, but they're designed to deal with a gasoline fire.
Yeah. No. The recipe for disaster. Mm. Yeah, absolute disaster. And even, like, I have a friend of mine who is an automotive engineering consultant in Oshawa. And he just points out that, when you're charging them, there's a coolant in the handle that delivers just to keep, if you're kind of putting in the electricity at a maximum rate, there's a coolant in the system just to kind of cool things off. But the fluid there itself is flammable. So the whole concept of electronic vehicles is a fad. Governments got on board the fad and subsidized them hugely. And it'll be going down in history as one of the great errors, policy errors in that list. So, yeah.
The Canadian Taxpayers Association told me that if everybody went to electric vehicles, we would need another 13 Site C dam projects. A dam project that was supposed to cost us $3 billion, I think it was 13, maybe 8. I mean, the cost of this thing just skyrocketed. Where are we going to build all these hydroelectric dams? Because that was the last major dam site available in B.C.
Yeah, well, then another way of looking at it is something like you'd have to build 10 nuclear reactors to provide the electricity.
And nobody wants one of those in their backyard.
No, although they're getting now down to smaller modular ones that can be built closer to where you're using them, but we are not there yet. So here you have a bunch of politicians in Ottawa. They're on an emotional bandwagon about electronic vehicles, and nobody ever instructed them on how much electricity is going to be required. So they don't know that they're going to have to build 10 nuclear reactors. So.
Well, I don't see any plans for that.
No.
And, Ottawa still says they have the mandate where they want so many electric vehicles sold, and then by 2035, electric vehicle sales are mandatory for new vehicles.
Well, I think we're going to have a change in government by year end. Get a financial disaster, there could be a non-confidence vote, and they're gone. And I think I haven't wagered any money on it, but it's a probability.
Now, from Bloomberg, a headline related to electricity, AI is booming, so are household electricity bills.
Yeah, AI, whichever way you're using it or somebody else is using it, requires electricity. So there you go. Everything requires electricity. Now, I'm not sure how long this AI boom is going to continue, but a subject comes to mind, the great high-tech bubbles in the past. You had Western Telegraph in the 1873 bubble. Hey, Western Union. And guess what Western Union did? They provided the ticker tape machines to all the brokerage offices. Whoa, can you think of anything hotter than that? So that was the 1873 bubble.
Mm. Wow. So, again, somebody said history, you know, repeats. But I think Eric Haddock, one of our frequent guests on This Week in Money, he said history doesn't necessarily repeat, but it often rhymes.
Yeah, that's Mark Twain who...
Oh, Mark first, Twain said that?
First came out with that one, yeah.
Wow. I love Mark Twain.
Oh, yeah.
The man who said, golf, a perfectly good walk, ruined. Yes, and so here we are, by paying higher power bills for AI, you're actually financing the technology that's aimed at removing your job that helps you pay higher electricity bills.
Yeah, you got it's roundabout, Jim, but you got it. Yeah.
And I think another friend of our show has, Rick Ackerman has pointed out, AI hasn't made any money yet.
Oh, right, itself, yeah. Well, this was the case with the crazy railroad boom up to 1873 bubble, and then when it went bad, it was Vanderbilt who said they were insane to build railroads from nowhere to nowhere, because everybody had to have a railroad, and they were getting railroad right-of-ways and building them wherever, and then that was the case 1840s. With a mania for canal stocks. You opened a canal, or you got the rights to build a canal in a certain area, and these things were all speculative, and you, in order to get on the books as a shareholder, you had to be at the town where the canal was supposed to start. So people were galloping through the night in stage coaches to get to the next town to get on the hot canal stocks. And then canals were the big ones for 20 years or so, and then they kind of fell by the wayside, and then along came railroads. So I think when I should write a paper on high-tech bubbles.
From The Hill, home purchases are getting canceled at a record rate.
Yeah. I took that one, Jim, as purchases have been arranged or done, and then putting the financings together is not working. So their deals are getting canceled on houses. And, of course, house prices have been coming down for a couple of years now. So.
Yes, why buy a house for $1.2 million when you expect it to fall down to $900,000 or $800,000?
Right, yeah.
And from the Daily Mail, I hope you've got some information behind this headline, Bob. From the Daily Mail, the world will end in 25 years. Humanity will die and towns will become slaughterhouses. Oxford scientists' nightmare prediction. Their proof is inevitable and why billionaires in their bunkers should tremble.
Yeah, the world is going to come to an end. There was, in the 1800s in the New York State and that New England area where there was sort of a religious community, and they were, the promoter was absolutely convinced that the world was going to end. I think it was 1844. And he had done all his calculations based on, I think it was stuff in the Bible. Mm. And then he had the big, people sold their properties and they bought special gowns to face the end of the world. And then his date didn't work out. So then he tried another one for a few months hence. And that didn't work out either. And then the guy became a disgrace.
Well, also, we have another headline that says China's bull stock market is hugely risky. Is it the same as their real estate market, which collapsed?
Yeah. Bubble risks in China, yeah. Yeah, I would say it's all over. Now, here's the problem facing China. It's still headed up by an authoritarian government of communists who are probably on the take for the money in the bubble hugely. And I don't know how deep their economy is, but being headed up by authoritarians, it'll be a disaster once their economy contracts even further. Now, also, I note that in Canada, the second quarter was negative GDP, so you can say that Canada's in a recession.
Yes, we just saw the latest numbers, 1.3% contraction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what happens when you're in a trade war with the world's biggest economy.
No, I don't put it on the trade war. Canada is not being hyped as strong as the U.S. economy, and it's falling. The economy is rolling over and dying naturally. And, of course, the Liberal government have really well gutted the economy and for the decade that essentially Trudeau prevailed. And he was out. I know there were a couple of delegates from Germany came and to meet with Trudeau about getting natural gas from Canada. It burns beautifully. And he just dismissed them. He says, no, global warming is the threat. We can't have CO2. So now, Carney, Prime Minister Carney is making some noises about getting the liquefied natural gas going, but look at the waste of time that Trudeau imposed. It's totally absurd. But yeah, liquid natural gas is going to be a very good product for Canada if you can just get the pipeline from Alberta to the coast. I mean, it is the boneheadedness out here is amazing.
Joseph Schachter, the publisher of the Schachter Energy Report and one of our guests on This Week in Money, pointed out to me that Canada is selling natural gas to the U.S. for 75 cents per cubic meter, I believe, or
yeah,
cubic
whatever.
Yard, whatever it is, whatever the measurement is. And the U.S. is reselling that natural gas to Europe for $12.
Yep.
So, yeah, another big mistake for Mr. T.
Total insanity. And, of course, Prime Minister Carney, he's an unlimited zealot about the threat of global warming. And underneath all of what he's talking about, carbon credits, all that sort of stuff, no, he does not want to see any expansion in the economy at all because it threatens the health of the planet. I mean, believe me on this one.
Well, we live in the second coldest climate on the planet. I think Antarctica is colder. And so, and also pointing out people are still scared that if we're forced to go to electric vehicles, how are you going to fire them up on a cold winter's day when batteries have a very low capacity? If it's minus 65 outside, and I've lived in minus 65 back in the 60s, back then you had to use a blowtorch underneath your gasoline tank to turn it back into a liquid so it could flow to your engine. Talk about a risky operation. Now, how's that going to work with an electric vehicle that if it catches fire, it's going to, well, at least it'd be warm for 3 days.
Well, years ago, the company I was with transferred me to Winnipeg, and it gets cold there. And I was only less than 10-minute walk to work at a pleasant apartment right on the river. But you had outdoor parking, but you put in a block heater and a radiator heater and also a battery blanket around your battery to keep it warm and plug it in. Now, I had an Alfa Romeo sports car then.
Oh.
And so this morning it was 49 below Fahrenheit. And that was quite a low. And I thought, okay, I'll just start up the Alfa so that I can claim starting an Alfa Romeo at the lowest temperature ever. And I still claim that one, 49 below. So
Yes, Hondas, nice cars to drive, but their heaters have always sucked. I had a Honda Accord when I lived in Regina. I had a block heater, a battery heater, a dipstick heater, and an interior heater, and used synthetic oil, and it still would just barely start.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, no,
there's a good reason to live in
a pretty good start out of the Alfa.
Yeah. How did it handle the snow and ice?
Oh, the handling of those Alfa Romeo sports cars was absolutely outstanding. Absolutely. So, I didn't put snow tires on it. Well, Winnipeg's quite flat. But if you were parked, I know we were parked at a pub just on the edge of town, and the rear wheels were on a patch of ice, so it was 35 below, and I got up there, and I got it started and let it warm up for a while, and some of the guys were still drinking in the bar, and then they came out, but the rear wheels were on a patch of ice, so I managed to get it reversed, but the tires were rotating against the ice, so the guys had to push me out to where it was bare pavement, and then I could get traction and get going. So then, you know, the other one with very cold climates is the tires freeze with the flat side down. And it takes about 5 minutes or 10 minutes of driving, thump, 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 before the tires get warmed up and get round again. That was another instruction from cold weather.
Yes, thump-tiddy-thump. I remember those as well. Bob? It's very warm in Vancouver. We have at least another week of very warm weather without rain. Usually this time of year, as the Pacific National Exhibition, the PNE starts, usually is also the start of the rainy season, but that's been delayed.
No, we're in the drought, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Except go out and work on your tan.
Yeah. in almost September.
Bob, always fun chatting with you.
Yeah, Jim, we had fun today. Thanks, and we'll look forward to next week.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief financial strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.